Welcome to Forgotten Women, the feminist podcast that brings history to life. We are celebrating women who rebelled, protested, and campaigned for social justice in 20th century Britain. So many activists, especially self-identifying women and non-binary folks, have been missed out of the history books, and we want to change that. Working with Bishopsgate Institute, we have delved into their archives to create these podcasts. Each of our episodes are recorded live in front of a studio audience, and each episode covers a different moment in history. Brief History of the Suffrage Movement by Rebecca Alloway.
The time is now. We won't be silenced. We won't be ignored. We won't be stopped. We are the forgotten women, and we're making history. Welcome to Forgotten Women, a podcast exploring the women history has pushed into the margins. These podcasts are recorded live, and all the sounds you hear are made by us live. We are Rosie Cunyu,
Eleanor Bailey,
Phoebe Jones,
Bethany Monk-Lane,
and Georgina Stone.
This is a brief history of the women's suffrage movement.
France, the end of the 18th century.
Revolutions in the air. The people have taken back their country. The monarchy have lost their heads.
The Channel Tunnel is red with the blood of the fight.
The people of England want better representation too. Very few people can vote.
In 1819 in Manchester, 70,000 gather at St. Peter's Field to demand to be represented. Cavalry charge at the crowd, injuring hundreds and killing a dozen people.
In 1831, Earl Grey, the man, not the tea, steered a new parliamentary bill through the House of Commons.
At this time, Bristol had 6,000 voters out of an adult population of over 100,000.
The bill was rejected and protests were held around the country, but were particularly violent in Bristol and Nottingham.
Castles were attacked, stones were thrown, and fires were started.
Hundreds of people are killed during the riots, 4 rioters are hanged and 88 imprisoned.
A new reform bill was prepared. If this was to be rejected, civil war was most likely.
It is passed in June 1832. The bill moderately improved representation and sought to correct seat distributions as towns and cities grew. It is an important step towards suffrage for all.
So, women got the vote then?
No. Actually, this is the first bit of British legislation that prevents women from legally voting. It specifies that voters are
male.
The story of women's suffrage is a long one, so we'll skip from 1832 to 1897, over 60 years later. In this time, a few women had begun campaigning and arguing for their right to vote.
Important women like Lydia Becker and Millicent Fawcett.
Millicent Fawcett established the NUWSS, also known as
the Suffragists.
They believed in peaceful protest and reasoned arguments.
They wrote letters and petitions, organised pilgrimages and chained themselves to railings and significant statues and places. Isabel Coe was actually arrested in Egham for riding her bicycle on the pavement as part of a pilgrimage between Edinburgh and Land's End.
Fawcett believed that in order to succeed, the organisation must be seen as intelligent, polite and responsible.
There were some women who were frustrated with the slow progress being made.
Emmeline Pankhurst had had enough. She no longer wanted to passively protest. She decided to branch off and form her own society.
The Women's Social and Political Union.
The WSPU.
This was formed in 1903, up in Manchester, but later spread across the country.
I was thinking of joining the WSPU. Have you heard about that?
And in 1906, there were many WSPU branches in London.
They later got the nickname
Suffragettes.
From the Daily Mail, who thought their behaviour was simply beastly.
The suffragettes were violent.
They were the sort of women
who set things on fire.
Who built bombs.
Who threw potatoes at politicians.
Sorry?
Yep.
The suffragettes were the sort of women who
Smashed windows.
Who got themselves arrested time and time again.
Who went on hunger strikes whilst in prison.
Who stood up in meetings and asked the same question over and over.
When will you give women the vote?
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 When will you give women the vote? When will you give women the vote? When will you give women the vote? When will you give women the vote? When will you give women the vote? When will you give women the vote? When will you give women the vote? When will you give women the vote?
Deeds, not words. Deeds, not words. Deeds, not words. Deeds, not words. Deeds, not words.
The suffragettes adopted the motto, deeds, not words. They were tired of peaceful protest and slow progress. Their violence disrupted the Victorian image of what a woman should be. Quiet and submissive.
These women were tired of arguing, resorting to increasingly militant actions. The government and police force were at a loss as to how to shut these women up.
Everything they tried failed. The suffragettes were more determined than ever.
7 years into their campaign, they were still fighting hard.
On the 18th of November, 1910, 300 women attempted to enter Parliament to argue for their rights. This was a day that would be later known as Black Friday.
We hung out of our windows as they passed. We'd read in the papers all about Mrs. Pankhurst and her women. She was a hard-looking woman who looked hard to ignore. She led a small group of a dozen or so down the road. They were dressed all in white with purple scarves and green hats. They looked beautiful. I was almost ashamed of my dirty face and wayward air, but then I remembered that they were all just criminals pretending to be fancy. As they reached the end of the road, I could see another group behind them, and another, and another. These small clumps of women walking together, determined. I could see the police line in the street too. Their faces looked so young compared to these women. These crowds gathered and I started to hear laughter and jeers. We joined in. It spreads things like that.
I remember it was busy. I remember the huge crowds of people surging through the streets. I held my sister's hand as we shuffled along. She held on so tight that I wouldn't get lost in the sea of strangers. I was scared.
I don't think I'd ever actually been scared before. It's not how you think it will be. I thought I would become alert, stronger, and have quick reactions, but in reality, it's much more grim.
I remember feeling small, smaller than usual, looking up at the black cloaked backs and assorted heads bobbing against the clouded grey backdrop. I remember the women around me were shouting and chanting.
Glory, glory, hallelujah. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Glory, glory, hallelujah. And the chorus goes marching on.
And I giggled, wanting to join in with the commotion. I remember the woman in front stopping abruptly, and I yelped as she stood on the toes of my left foot. But no one heard me. The crowd was getting louder, more frantic in their cries.
Glory, glory, hallelujah. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Glory, glory, hallelujah. And the chorus goes marching on.
I think a policeman might have hit out first. But if he did, it was only an attempt to control a woman who spat in his face. There was a blur of fists and feet and shouting. You could hear votes for women underneath the noise if you strained your ears.
At the sound of a cudgel hitting Mrs. Taylor in the back of the head, I felt a turn in my stomach right above my waistline, which climbed up and under my ribs. That's when I started breathing breaths that felt worthless. I was gasping for air, but I never felt the satisfaction of full lungs.
From where we were, you could see the chaos spread through the crowd until it reaches Mrs. Pankhurst, who fought the police officer twice as hard as the other ladies. There was such conviction in her eyes that I was glad to be up high. These women yanked and jostled and screamed.
After being pushed about by elbows and hidden by a bustle of skirts, I really felt the terror, because just out of my sight, my mother was thrown to the floor and beaten. I'd never heard my mother complain or even raise her voice before. Hearing these moans and shrieks from her pure voice started a fire in me.
A woman was thrown from her tricycle as a policeman attempted to remove the wheels. He only stopped when a top-hatted fellow took down his number and declared loudly that he should be ashamed of himself. I didn't know what to make of it all. There didn't seem to be a right or wrong to any of it. The police officers treated the women with such disregard, but that looked mutual from where I was standing.
I threw myself onto the abandoned body of my mother. Her skin was marked and the colour of blood, but without being torn. Her dress had been split at the front, revealing her petticoat with the blue lace around the neckline. And her eyes. I'll never forget her eyes rolling back into her head. I felt I'd lost her for a moment. I lifted her head onto my lap and wept over her, but my cries were silenced by the crowd surging around me, relentlessly colliding with my lowered head. My mother finally came to, in such a gentle way I'd only ever seen in the image of a baby stirring.
My hat's gone and been trampled on, still being pushed through the crowd. I see the policemen grabbing and lifting up women's skirts. There's so much shouting and aggression. With another blunder, I smash into the back of this well-off gentleman. Twist, turn, and just before I slam to the ground, that's where I see in the distance my own sister, beaten with that policeman's cudgel, down to the ground, screaming, "Get off! Get off! Get off!" I strained to unfold her poor collapsed body that had been thrown against the cobbles. As she began to rise, her eyes met with mine. A moment of rest pinned amongst chaos. Her cheeks sat promptly upon her face with cold purple lips etched between. Her nose must have hit with a substantial force for it to bleed at the rate it was doing so. Having reached as tall as she could handle, I took her arm and hastily wrapped it over my shoulder, being careful not to damage her even more. Once again, our bruised and battered hands greeted, but this time, just a slight tighter.
It's important to remember the struggle of these women who fought so hard to get the vote. It wasn't an easy battle.
Thousands of women and some men joined the movement to get women the vote.
Some extraordinary women dedicated their lives to the cause.
They never gave up. On the 4th of June, 1913, Emily Wilding Davison attended the Epsom Derby. It was a day that has gone down in history.
I removed my shawl, feeling the heat of the early summer sun hit the back of my neck.
A line of sweat lines the collar of my shirt and reminds me I'm here to work. I sit with my journal and my pen, watching my uncle as he shakes hands with men and makes the women laugh.
My husband escorted me as close to the front of the crowd as we could get, in order to get the greatest possible view of the horses. I observed the swelling crowd on the opposite side of the track.
He is from this world. Shortly before the races, after lunch begins, he takes me to his booth. It's only enough space for one, but I fold myself into a corner. He begins his commentary with cheer and vigour.
I smiled and clapped in delight as I heard the horse's hooves, and I knew the race had begun.
They hang off his every word as the inevitable unfolds. We all love the thrill of the chase.
As the horses appeared around the bend, the cheers deepening.
I can see a woman. It must be a woman.
She was a dainty little thing. She began to duck under the barrier, the material of her light dress gently floating the direction of the wind, her red hair glowing in the sun. As she stepped out onto the track, the light material of her lilac dress fought harder and harder against the stream of air flying off those horses' hooves.
I cannot believe my eyes. They swing round to my uncle, but he is lost. For the first time, he has no words.
My ears rang. A noise so paralysing that it makes you feel as though you have temporarily lost all control.
A woman, struck down by the king's horse.
My husband shielded my eyes, but he could not protect my ears.
I could be sure people were screaming, but I could not hear a thing.
Sprawled across the grass like a limp doll she lay. Bonnet amiss, blouse torn and tainted, her skirt askew. But still she lay, sweet Emily, with heart on fire.
I could not take my eyes off her.
With full force, time sped on, and before I could think, my legs were carrying me to her side.
What was that in her hand?
For I could only imagine I was running for a lifetime until I was met by a barrage of men. A weedy, 5'9" man at best exclaimed. It was a sight that would send any woman to her grave.
No one could have known her plan.
Then grave I shall go.
A courageous woman, I must confess.
With that, I hitched up my skirt, dropped to my haunches and scuttled my weight to where my Emily lay crumpled, intoxicated by injustice.
A true martyr for her cause.
Forward, forward, sisters, onward evermore. Bondage is behind you, freedom is before.
You've been listening to Forgotten Women. With special thanks to Bishop's Gay Institute and Egger Museum. Thank you.
Right is might, and in strength we shall be strong, and the cause goes marching on.
To see more of the project, including the actors involved, please visit our website, www.forgottenwomen.co.uk. You can also find exclusive content from our writers and more information on the creatives involved. You can follow us on Twitter at Forgotten Women and on Instagram at Forgotten Women Podcast. Thank you very much for listening. We'd really love it if you can rate, review and subscribe to help other people find the podcast.